Hey, welcome to Blackall Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today. And as we broadcast all around the world, thanks to the Yidinji broadcast system and service, and of course our friends at Bumabipa Media 98.7 FM. Wherever you're listening to this program, I hope you're doing well, and I hope the big boss upstairs is looking after you and making sure you're doing okay. We've got Yirilum and Ganyara back in the studio. Bumi was here recently. He has to go out. He's making some shields, so we won't see him for a little while, but that's okay. Wherever you are, Kalna, we thank you for dropping in. And but anyway, we're going to be looking at a number of things today, and there's been a lot of talk about this High Court decision and what this Native Title decision means for Aboriginal people nationwide. Nationwide means inside of Australia. Of course, Native Title legislation is for Indigenous Australians. I'm going to read a little bit from the ABC News website. There's probably a lot of other experts who have contributed to this conversation, but we're going to use this one. Legal experts say the High Court win by the Northern Territory's Gumatj clan against the Commonwealth might bolster cases for other Indigenous groups in the territories that haven't been compensated for development on their land, but it's not so clear-cut for mob in the states. The late Dr. Yunupingu filed the case on behalf of the Gumatj people in 2019 to prove his mob were owed compensation from the Crown for taking ownership of minerals in 1939 and greenlighting the mining of bauxite from the 1960s on the Gove Peninsula without the clan's consent. The win confirms that Native Title is protected by the Constitution and that extinguishment of Native Title requires just compensation. So Australians obviously are eligible for compensation in certain situations like this, just like any other property. That's not part of the article, by the way. Just like any other property right in this country, Mabo said. The Mabo Centre Director, Professor Eddie Cabillo, told the ABC's Indigenous Affairs team. Anyway, it goes on to say this, that and the other. There might be up to $700 million compensation, but that's yet to be determined. So I think it's really important to sort of look at it from where we're standing. Obviously, Article 28 of UNDRIP comes to mind and a few others, but Ganyara, I will bring you in here. Obviously, it is an Australian court. It appears to be some sort of win for the Indigenous people or Australians of Indigenous heritage. But what? How do you see it?
Well, to put it into a bit of a tailspin, $700 million is peanuts, you know, if that's their possible win. Peanuts for what they're actually owed under Article 28 of UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous Peoples. It says you must give them back their country, basically, give it all back, or give them somewhere of equal stature, or pay them for the full amount that they've been deprived of, not just some little compensation win there. But when you look at this, you've got to understand in the world of legal identities, illegal personalities, as to where they're created. Now, these are all Australian identities, which to me means that they've abandoned their original sovereign nation law, which when the one that they acknowledge in the Uluru Statement as to being here first, it's always still here, it hasn't been ceded or extinguished. So they're really going to accept peanuts for what they're really owed in their true status. Secondly, are they being a more privileged Australian lot? You know, and this is where I run across a lot of this stuff here. I've noticed it, and people don't like it when I say it, but Aboriginal Australians, just like Chinese Australians, just like British Australians, they're all Australian identity created pursuant to the Australian Constitution. So Pauline Hanson is an Indigenous Australian, in my opinion. You know, if you start to look at this in its proper light, Article 28 is talking about another nation, another state, another entity out there, not Australians. They're talking about the other thing out there. What is it, the other thing? It's the coexisting sovereignty that they're talking about. And it's when you go back to there, that's where you truly owed the full amount, not just, you know, $700 million for a little bit of bauxite. And Native Title is always inside Australia. A Native Title determination basically is the acknowledgement that the natives in their true capacity have land title over their country. So this is the hard part for most people to understand. Oh, we got you know, we can't go and camp on our country, we can't go and live on our country under native title. Of course you can't, because you are an Indigenous Australian, just like Pauline Hanson, an Indigenous Australian. So when I start to talk about this stuff, people get a tad upset. Why am I saying that Indigenous Australians shouldn't be compensated for the little bit of money that they're owed on this sort of claim? It's because they're in their wrong capacity. The human is not the legal identity. It is seen through the legal identity.
Yeah, you're pointing out that you could be of Chinese heritage, Australian, or you could be of another nation throughout the world, European or whatever, and that under a democracy, which Australia is supposed to be, no matter whether you're a First Nations person from this country, you're all under the same law, which is Australian, of course. But there's a big difference for all mob from this country, the original mob, is that they've got a choice, as you said, that they can go back to their own sovereign law. If you're from China or Europe and come to this country, you can't go back to a sovereign law. You can go back to your country you came from, maybe, or your heritage, your parents or grandparents. But here, the original people have got the choice to go back to their sovereign nation.
Absolutely. Capacity. And that's something to remember, is that in this UNDRIP applies globally. It really does, you know. Maybe over in, like the Sami over in Europe, you know, Northern Europe, they got every right to go back there and start to revitalise all their stuff. If you look at Article 5 of UNDRIP, you know, you can revitalise all your stuff of your Indigenous nation whilst you retain a right to participate fully in the life of the state, if you so choose. Now, if you don't so choose, you know, you are the owner of all your material goods on your country. So that's what you've got to be paid for, whatever you've been deprived of. Read Article 28. It's very clear. But if you want to be an Indigenous Australian, you want to take part in the life of the state, you aren't entitled to any of that stuff there. So, yes, it is a win for Indigenous Australians. It really is, you know, or the Australians of Aboriginal heritage. It's a win for them of some sort. But what it's highlighting to me is the discrimination now, the discrimination between Australian identities, you know. And this is the very issue. All Australian identities are created equal. Pauline Hanson, the whole box and dice, she is an Indigenous Australian. But the Aboriginal people here, they got every right, as you said, to go back to their sovereignty. The one that was here before the white fellas come, the one that's still here today, the one that Uluru talks about as being unceded, unextinguished, the one that UNDRIP says you must be paid fully for the full amount of your country, whatever you've been deprived of. Now, an Aboriginal Australian has no more right to be here than does a Chinese Australian, does Pauline Hanson's, you know, Australian identity. They got no right to be here because there is no formal agreement yet. There is no power sharing arrangement between the two, the what they want to say, coexisting sovereignties. That's very, very important.
Yeah. You know, you just, if there was an Australian family, let's say it's a white Australian family, they were farmers, and the Commonwealth wanted to build a military airport through that system for national security and sovereignty reasons, they'd get just terms compensation as well. So there is an application there that is quite even or equal, but what you're pointing out correctly is the amount. If there's true settlement, it can't be done through the Australian law. It has to be done with Yidinji or in this case, the Yolngu or the Gumatj clan in their true and correct capacity. So I think that point stands. However, you know, what that may... the opportunity might arise is that whatever money is settled upon be used to actually create your government. Because, I mean, it is very difficult, as we know, to create a government structure and based on the tribal law and the sovereignty here out of thin air. So, yes, but usually what happens is that people, when there is an influx of money, be it very small, regular or large, that people tend to stick with that because it's there, it's usable straight away, as opposed to the sovereignty side of things, which is a lot of hard yakka.
Well, I'll just put a spanner in the works here now. Australia's up for grabs, basically. There has been no treaty, you know, for the want of a better word, a power-sharing arrangement. There has been no legal agreement between the First and Time people, that's the Aboriginal people, in their true and correct capacity as members of their society that was here before the white fellas come. So, you know, as in our case, the Yidinji. Before the Europeans come, they were the sovereign authority on this bit of land here, but the British come and just sort of moved in onto the our house and just sort of took over a bit of our house, but they didn't gain the legal right to occupy the house. So this is what I'm saying. Whoever can acquire that legal right to occupy properly will acquire Australia, and this is how very dangerous it is for Australia to be playing these silly little games. It's now known, you know, it's now shown that that the Aboriginal nations can actually do a treaty or a deal or power sharing arrangement, whatever you want to call it. It's irrelevant what you want to call it. They can do an arrangement with another international actor that may not be so Australia friendly. You know, our preferred status as Yidinji is to try and look after the ones who are here, the mums and dads, the Australians. And it's all about where the legal identity is created and how did the Australian Constitution get here to be able to create that identity for humans to take part in the life of Australia. It just sort of moved in. So it's got to be very, very careful. As you can see here, they're paying compensation because they know that they were deprived of something, but they're not paying the full amount. It may be a dud payment, in my opinion. Should it be shown that it's going to the wrong lot? It should be going to the Aboriginal mob and not the Indigenous Australians. It should be, and how are we going to pay that? What, in Aussie dollars that can be just printed out of existence, you know, just, you want to call it inflation. What I call it is lack of purchasing power or devaluation of money. So they'll give you this $700 million. It might be able to buy a sandwich in 10 years' time. We don't know what it's going to buy because it is just printed out of thin air. They're dead instruments. People don't realise that legal tender is not what people think it is. It's not something of value. It's just printed up. So you're going to get something printed up for your land. Give me a break here. There's more to this than meets the eye. So you've got to be in your true capacity. Only Australians can handle that money. You're not going to be gourmet, you know, in your proper capacity as a sovereign nation. You're going to be an Australian, and you will get something. Which then does remind me that there are other cases out there. You know, there is the Yumbanji mob taking Fortescue to task, Fortescue and the West Australian government to task over what they're owed, and they're talking $1.8 billion. And once again, this is a pittance. I mean, absolute pittance to what their country is worth and what they've been deprived of under the Articles of UNDRIP. People must see this for what it is. This is just a way of keeping the natives happy with little things, you know, gaudy beads and blunt axe heads. And that's really what it is.
Yeah, I guess you know, the problem with the money side of things, you're right, it can, you know, you've seen it in different places and the global financial crisis, how some money just fell apart and everything else that was attached to it, real estate, and became, you know, pretty vulnerable and volatile. To be fair, I think it is far more secure to underwrite with your currency, as in the tribal sovereignty, which is why we've set up the Reserve Bank here, the Yidinji Reserve Bank, and a few others to really stand the test of time. And those things are just around the corner in terms of, you know, global instability is here now. You know, there is this China and America versus the world formation taking place right now. And, you know, Donald's promised to make this the golden era and all that kind of stuff. And whether you like him or not, he's a businessman.
Golden calf.
The golden calf, yeah. So, I mean, the issue is here is, what is the true value of money? You know, don't be blinded by that. And it is just stuff. As much as we, you know, well, as in most people on the continent use money every day, it's one of those things that people use but never really truly understand. And like you said, it can be created, you know, not out of thin air, but, you know, through some sort of legislation, just like the Yidinji one. So, except for the Yidinji one has the right to be here. The Australian money does not. This is the whole point that you made before, Ganyara. Moving forward now, after my little rant there, I'm just thinking about you know, it's so hard because a lot of the mob do need the money to make ends meet, to survive, and that's the Commonwealth knows that, and this is where it gets a bit tricky.
Well, they're just using might, absolute brute force and might, to keep Aboriginal people away from their resources. That they're just straight out depriving them of everything that they are entitled to.
Deceit
would be the truth of the matter. They're just lying to them. They're actually lying to the Australians as well, and they're kidding themselves because, make no two bones about it, there are Asian nations that are looking at securing land title with some of the Aboriginal nations. And if I was Australia, I'd be very, very concerned about that action. It's going to be very hard to argue in international court. What's going on basically in the world is they're talking about disbanding the UN, just breaking the world up, especially with Donald and, you know, President Trump, the way he's going, wanting to buy Greenland and wanting to take Canada and wanting Panama, and we'll just take it. What about if he moved down here and thought about Australia's up for grabs? You know, Jackie Lambie, Senator Lambie made recently a comment that Pine Gap should go. Get the Americans out of Pine Gap. Just get them out. They don't deserve to be here. They're putting sanctions on Australia, or tariffs on Australia, sorry, not sanctions, tariffs. So Jackie's saying, well, buggy, if you want to put tariffs against our steel and aluminium and that, how about get out of Pine Gap? And then the US will be blind in the southern hemisphere, as in its base collection there will have to go. Well, how is that going to shape up for America, when really at present the world is breaking up looking for territory? You know, the Asian nations are looking out for somewhere else to go. They're moving into the Southwest Pacific. Gee, that's roughly where Australia is, you know. So I think the United States of America really needs to start to look very seriously at what Yidinji is saying.
Yeah, I think they're doing that. So, anyway, that's the... what does that mean for the average punter on the ground here, Yirrlun? Because when you're talking about the average punter, we're not talking about the top 3% or 1% of the Australian public who may know this. Or, you know, this is about really trying to inform people what the story is and then how secure or insecure their lives are right now. And that's what we're trying to do here is provide that safety net. But that's a huge job. Within the civics education in Australia, it's failing absolutely. People wouldn't even know who the first three prime ministers of Australia were, let alone have read the constitution and things like that. So how do we win hearts and minds with putting forward the Yidinji position?
Well, yeah, look at the current world that we live in. We have phones. You know, you're talking about the average punter. Well, most of the average punters have phones, and on these phones they stick apps. And on these apps there are agreements where if you want this app, well, you've got to agree to this, this and this. The average punter doesn't read one word of that agreement. They tick, yes, I accept, and go ahead and keep moving. That's pretty much the analogy for the rest of what's happening out there in a political and administrative sort of sense, that nobody's paying much attention, no one's really interested, except what have they got? You know, what's affecting them immediately in their world? It is par for the course, unfortunately. It's that mentality of just following the others, just keep going along, and she'd be right, mate. It's not going to get us anywhere if we just keep following the rest of the world, as we've been talking about here on the whole session, that the world is not looking too good in itself. So what's a better position for us to stand up? And that's what Yidinji's done. Yidinji's given the world a better position, a better start, a better way to move forward that can benefit everybody. Yeah, and it's about everybody moving forward. And that's, you know, that comes back to the most ancient understanding of who we are as human beings. That's why we operate this way, because we are equal in a spiritual sense. We were made together. And without that understanding, all you're going to end up with is just with the what you were talking about before, the 3% and people not really benefiting across the board.
You're listening to Black and Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. Thanks to our friends at the Bumavipra 98.7 FM station. If you're listening outside of the Yidinji territory, it's probably via the National Indigenous Radio Service. Wherever you are, we thank you for your listening audience and for all those mobs who let us broadcast on your spectrum. We'll be back after the break. In the land of the indigenous,
fighting for our rights. In the land of the indigenous, we got to stand up for our rights. Australian bites to the coral gates of the Torres Straits. Know where we all stand in the land of the indigenous. The voices of this land and the spirit of the Torres Strait. Come together as one in the land of indigenous.
Well, it's a sign of things to come, I guess. The interesting story from the Guardian newspaper now is that, you know, in the Indigenous incarceration rates in jail have risen by 20% since 2019, the Closing the Gap data shows. New data reveals child protection, incarceration and suicide rates getting worse. So this is from the Guardian newspaper not too long ago. The rates of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people imprisoned increased by 12% in a year, and it was up to 20% since 2009, despite state and federal governments agreeing to reduce rates of incarceration by 15% by 2031 in June 2020. Indigenous organisations have urged greater action from all governments to improve the lives of Indigenous peoples after new Closing the Gap data revealed child protection, Indigenous incarceration and suicide rates were getting worse. Overall, the data showed 4 targets were on track to be met, 6 targets showed improvement but were not on track to be met. So X, Y and Z. This comes back to my point is that the system appears to give Aboriginal people a win in the courts, but at the same time they'll lock up more people. And you know, as a journalist, I was covering that for 20 years, the same rubbish over and over again. And I can tell you now that the government, the Commonwealth of Australia, is not going to solve it for you. The state of Queensland is not going to solve it for you. They have limited administrative skills. They don't understand cultural policy. They don't understand, as much as they want to have as many Aboriginal people working in the Torres Strait Islander people, that leopard cannot change its spots. I don't know how many times I'm going to tell you on this radio show, but you will find in 20 years, 100 years, 1,000 years from now, the same symptoms of that system. It can't change. You're going to have to rebuild your nation. You're going to have to be the ones that make sure that the policies that you're trying to implement in that other world are actually implemented in your world under your jurisdiction, your responsibility, under your authority and tribal sovereignty. Ganyara.
The gap, everyone keeps talking about the gap. The gap itself is the lack of formal agreement between the coexisting sovereignties. How can I say this any other way? They mention an Uluru coexisting sovereignties. That's the gap right there. When there's coexisting worlds, there's no power sharing arrangement. And all that Australia keeps assuming is that all the Aboriginals are in the sovereignty of the Australian Crown. They're not over in their other sovereignty that coexists with the Crown. No. You can't be over there. You've all got to be seen as Australians. And there is the fundamental problem to this right there and then. You've got to go back to your Aboriginal nation, the one that's here first, the one whose sovereignty is neither ceded nor extinguished, and you've got to revitalise all the old laws, because under those old laws, say we're talking about youth crime, for example, you know, kids coming from one area into another area to steal cars or to break in or whatever happens, or, you know, drunkenness from the adults in from one area in another person's area. All those issues were addressed by the old ancient laws in the first place. They would never be there today if they were all back into their true and correct capacity. But it's this gap of all being seen legally as Australians, and you are not. And Australia will not allow the Aboriginal people to go back to their original law to bring it back to life, because they're frightened of one thing. They're frightened that they're going to lose absolute control of this country. But, you know, this is what we've got to go back to. We've got to understand that these laws were there for a reason hundreds of years ago, was to keep harmony on the place. You know, you had to be fair, but, you know, you had to be tough as well. You just couldn't let drunkenness take part in your territory. So what are the elders doing now, the Aboriginal elders? They're saying, well, we can't do much. The police come along and they hammer us. If we pick up the kids for misbehaving, for example, a good one there is the kids misbehaving. And, you know, the elders try to discipline those kids. Coppers come along and discipline the elders for disciplining the kids. You know, they come along and hammer the elders, take them to court. You know, you can't hammer kids. You can't do this, you can't do that, because you're an Australian and you're not allowed to touch the kids in Australia. But this is the very fundamental problem. They know there's another law there. The elders know this. They know how to do it. But the Commonwealth of Australia is forcing the Aboriginal people to be seen through the Australian identity only, when they got no right to do that. They got the right to go back to their Article 5. They got the right to go back to their sovereign world, where it was here before the Waifalas come. And they got a right to participate in the life of the state if they so choose. But if they don't want to choose, they can't be forced to assimilate. Read Article 8 of UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People. Can't be forced to assimilate in the state. You can go back and do this, but the state and its belligerence and its belligerent occupation of the place is the one that's causing the gap. It's the one that's creating this crime issue. When there's crime, everyone says, oh, can you please save me from the crime? And then so they'll hand over all their rights to the Australian government to, oh, just save me from the crime. It is causing itself. You know, this is such a fundamental no-brainer. Yet, where are we? We have all these targets, the targets, as they keep saying, to be met, which they never will until there's a formal agreement or a power-sharing arrangement put in place between the coexisting sovereignties.
It would be interesting to see how people could actually use the laws that they're trying to enshrine inside of Australia at the moment in terms of the cultural things and understandings. I guess, Yirrkala, I mean, you've been involved with that a fair bit over the last few years now, even before you came into this office, but I'm just wondering, what are some of the difficulties in trying to introduce Aboriginal themes, cultural perspectives inside of Australia? I mean, you've been involved with some of these things, yet only to write up a big, beautiful report, but not being accepted, or you know what I mean? There's a lot of challenges there.
Yeah, well, you know, like Gagnaro's described it as a gap. This gap makes the Grand Canyon look like a little hole in the ground. It's so vast the difference between traditional social structures and then what's happening in this country, because you cannot have anything cultural working under a government. The culture is separate to a government. It's not something that's decided by voting. The wisdom of elders is not something that a tribe would vote for. It was something that was just recognised outright. And that decision-making then is the one that, you know, helps reduce things like crime, behaviour, in the instances of what the world is seeing today, but so much more than that. That's just the tip of the iceberg of what comes under better, what would you say, managers, not the right word, because that sounds more like back into politics. It's definitely not a political or administrative faction. It's something which operates separate to it. So, yeah, that's the biggest challenge that will be faced, is the removal of any cultural decisions from politics. And only then will we see some work forward.
Gagnaro.
Yeah, it's the real issue. What do you do first? You know, there are some massive problems created by the Europeans, I suppose, the Commonwealth of Australia. Look, they started to give the Aboriginal people drugs and grog. You know, think about that. Pregnant women, you're pregnant with a little baby, unborn, you're drinking or you're using drugs. And it's not only Aboriginal, but it's really concentrated in the Aboriginal world on purpose. You know, I was actually hearing that, you know, this is God's hand at work type stuff, you know, is getting them drunk and getting mental retardation from the alcohol or whatever else it may be that they're intoxicating themselves with. Which is rather sad. And those children are now growing up and having children of their own, you know. So the problem is being exacerbated by the just give them grog and keep them out the way, keep them on the mission, you know. So they're happy when they're drunk. What a mentality for a Western society to have on certain portions of people in the geographical location. They should be very concerned about the use of alcohol, the use of drugs, but it's easy to overlook it. Just let them drink and they'll be right and they'll just be happy. But it's causing this problem that's now moving out. You know, the Alice problem, as I like to call it, is now moving into our part of the world over here on the East Coast. Moving out when they ban the grog, where are the alcoholics going to go? They're going to go to the nearest pub or the nearest place where they can get grog and get it cheaply, you know. So, sadly, that's over here. And so they're moving out. We've got the problems associated with that now. As well as the way the Western government, the Australian government operates. You bring someone down from, you know, one of the communities, I call them missions, bring them down from one of the communities for jail, put them in jail, you know, up on the table end there. When their time's up, just kick them out and put them down in one of, what we want to call it, Cairns. Put them in Cairns. They'll find somewhere to go at night. They'll find a, yet we've got homelessness now. We've got, now you say, not only alcoholism, you've got homelessness, you know, and it's just going through the roof. Where do people find a house? You know, it's raining down here at present in the good country. Where do they find a roof over their head that's dry? You can't. Oh, we're just going soothe ourselves with a bit of alcohol or a bit of drugs, you know, and then you've got the young youth running around, you know, stealing the last $5 off them. You know, all these sort of little problems that are going on, yet what's going on? Aren't we a modern world where the Aboriginal people are supposed to be looked after?
Yeah, I think it's, that extension of the colonial project, really, whether people, you know, you often hear these unintended consequences of Indigenous incarceration and this, that and the other, but really when you think about it, it is an exact measurement, because the attitudes of the British when they first came here was that we'll breed them out, they'll die, they'll become extinct, or we'll, you know. Now that moved into some sort of assimilation project, and you know that the symptoms of that now are, you know, well, if you don't do it our way, we're going to lock you up and jail you, and we'll take your kids off you. So it is a very, very big problem. I'm not saying I'm against the law, because the law is there, the rule of law has to be there, but you know, if you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. In the Commonwealth of Australia, you be very, very careful. The ones that are implementing these things nefariously to deny Aboriginal people, you're going to have to pay for it. It may not be in this lifetime, but when you're sitting face to face with God, you better remember all these things, because it's going to come back to give you a lifetime of hurt and pain. So, you know, there are spiritual consequences to these things. Not that I would wish that on anyone, but it's more about people start to need to start respecting and understanding tribal sovereignty. But not only that, not just talk about it, but actually do it, because it needs that leadership from the nation to open that space for people to come in. You can't say, oh, that's my house. You can say this is my house and everything else, but if you don't let people in, they can't see what's in the house and your photos, your family photos, your history, you know, your pool room, whatever it may be, all the things that make you uniquely you, you're going to have to open up the house and let them in. Even if, you know, you might think that they're going to rob you. But ultimately, there's no insecurity about that, because it's always yours. So that's what, you know, I think is really important. is that we have to, the nations have to show that leadership. And sometimes the money and these obscene policies of forced removal, you know, and foster home foster care and institutional home care and all that kind of stuff, it'll either make people more drawn to the system or repel them back to their own tribal sovereignty.
Oh, look, it's got some massive consequences at present. And that's why I keep coming back to this. Australia doesn't realise how close it is to be overrun by other entities. You know, they like to think how great they are because they're here with their might against, you know, the couple hundred thousand Aboriginal people. But let's have a look at the big picture of the world, the global picture of the world, where you have literally billions of people looking for a place to go, a home, resources to be acquired, to, you know, food, for example, food security from some of these bigger Asian nations. Have a think about that. We've got 25 million people on this continent, roughly, or give 26. Let's just be generous. And yet we've got Indonesia with 330 million, just roughly. You know, we've got China there with roughly a billion people. We've got India sitting there with 1,000 million people, roughly, give or take. You know, and yet we're 25 million with all the resources and all the food. So not only are they looking for resources, but Australia hasn't secured the right to be here to administer the place. What would happen, say, if India went and done a deal with some of the lots around here to secure a food-producing country for their nation, for all their people? Where would Australia be? How is Australia going to defend itself from that? Or Indonesia, for example, just sitting up there, 300 million people can come over here. We want somewhere to grow food. You know, how do you say, no, you can't have that? Yet if an Aboriginal nation does a deal, what does Australia do? You know, so Australia has to be very careful. So they really need to start to look seriously at these things like this High Court decision to get $700 million compensation. Really, they've got to start to look at the Yidinji way of things and look at it properly for what it's meant to be. We've got to secure the place for a start. You know, we can settle it. We can settle the past. Say, yeah, here's a few dollars and away you go. But there's no power sharing arrangement now. Some of the, maybe India, for example, would be happy to acknowledge the authority that the Aboriginal nations have and possess here, and when they're here, they'll abide by the nation's laws. And that's fair enough, you know, that's how it should be. Australia's refusing to do that. And in return for that, you know, acknowledgement of law, we'll defend you. We'll defend you from them Australians that don't have the right to be here yet. So now all of a sudden the Australians are insecure. In their tenure, the Aboriginal people are right, but the average mum and dad who have just bought $1 million house here are insecure. You know, so the land title system, the whole lot is up for grabs and the world is breaking up. You can see the world the way it's going at present. No one really abides by the international courts. You know, I think Duterte got picked up recently, but it's one of the few little nations that did. But you look at the Americans, the Chinese, the Russians, they don't agree. They don't give standing to the international court. You know, the criminal court, for example, the ICJ and the ICC, they don't give acknowledgement to that. So is the court really real, the international courts? Of course not. It's the force of the gun that makes it real. So if the Indians come down, they're nuclear armed. Or if the Chinese come down, they're nuclear armed. Or the Americans come down, they're nuclear armed. How about we do a deal? It's the force, you know, it's the projection of force and authority that'll be the real deal breaker here, you know. So the Aboriginal people being bashed and hammered all the time, and not being taken seriously under law, their law, you know, that's what the gap's all about. If it's not taken seriously, maybe they will do a deal with one of these other big powers that Australia can't defend itself from. And I'm starting to hear that on the grapevine already.
Well, it's been reported in certain places, even on the SBS, for example, about potential deals with China and all those things, and even the Australian government representative saying that you can go and do with China if you want to. So it's one of those things where there might be a part of Australia that's pro-China because China is the largest trading partner for Australia, past Japan there a few years ago. But there's also this pro-American West US Israel British AUKUS model. So they've sort of got they're a bit of stuck against each other, really. You know, you have in Darwin an American base there, but the port's owned by China or run by China. So it's a bit of a mixed bag. And I think in a world that needs clarity and yes and no, are you my friend or are you my enemy, that's going to be very, very, very important. And the last thing you want is a continent that is divided. And Australia, whether they know it or they're doing it on purpose or whatever it may be, they're struggling to keep a hold of it all in one go, is because they need to listen to the likes of the Yidinji Nation and others that are now asserting their sovereignty.
Why aren't they? That's the question. Why are they dragging the chain? Why are they dragging their feet? Kicking the can down the road, yet Yidinji is saying very clearly, and over the last few years, it is getting serious now. You know, the joke is nearly over. Someone will move in. It won't be far away because there is a battle for resources of the globe. You know, you look at Donald Trump, you know, I'm going to take Greenland, for example. I want to get that. You know, I thought that was part of Denmark, but, oh, well, we'll just work a deal and we'll buy the place or whatever we've got to do. Canada, you know, talking about Canada becoming the 51st state, you know, of the US. The US talking about taking over Panama, you know, the Panama Canal. Hang on a sec, how do you do this if you're there? But when you're the might, you know, the big power, when you're the one of the big actors of the world, the serious ones, you've got the authority to do whatever you like. This is what Australia has done, by the way, to the Aboriginal people. We are the authority and we will stand on you every step of the way. Be careful of what you do to the Aboriginal people, because it may, the shoe may be on another foot and someone big will come down and step on the little Australian world, you know, and it won't take much. It really... I'm trying to tell the Australians it does not look like much. I don't think Australia could defend itself from the drug cartels, for example. You know, how, if one of them come along with all their cashed up, you know, modernised cartel forces to come into the world, what's the Australian military going to do? Absolutely nothing.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's 65,000 troops or servicemen and women. You know, it's nothing. And these conversations would have been had by ASPE and all the national security you know, college, the ANU, and a lot of people would have been thinking about this. But there's only technology can only do so much. I mean, you know, if you're relying on technology to defend the border, then, you know... even America, with its great budgets and great army and navy, still struggle to protect their borders. But, you know, Donald's been very serious about that recently. But these criminal outfits are very, very organised, and they have people in high places who are, you know, potentially their friends that allow these things. So it is an interesting position. I think it's really important to let Australians know that the Yidinji Nation is very much been saying the same thing over and over again for the last 10 years. It's about settlement. It's about securing the future for everyone. And that means everyone, black fellow, white fellow, doesn't matter. And we're doing it for not one Australian dollar. I mean, even if we were offered $700 million you know, by the High Court or the Australian government, we're going to say, well, I don't think so. I'm sorry, but all the money in the world is not going to pay for it. You're going to have to accept our way and move forward. What is our way? Is looking after your neighbour and making sure that we can feed each other and clothe each other and provide shelter, emergency shelter to people who are homeless, you know, orphans or widows, whatever it may be. These are the things that are really woven into that tribal fabric of the society that is here. And that's this beautiful original design that needs to flourish and needs to tell the world what's going on there.
Absolutely. You know, that you couldn't have hit it on the head any better, because, you know, there is a deep understanding of equality in the spirit, and we have to all work together, move forward together. The system that most of the world is experiencing is not that system. It's a pyramid type system with people at the top. Unless there is equality applied to all in all aspects of economic and political senses, and the freedom that should be allowed in a cultural sense, the system won't work.
Yeah, look, it's a hard one to for most people to get their head around. They just think Australia is the big almighty power here. You know, we live in paradise. Honestly, I mean, we live in paradise. We're here with 25 million people on a continent that's roughly the size of the United States. They, you know, they got 350 million, we got 25. Come on, look, we're living in paradise. We're isolated from the world all around by sea. We don't have land neighbours, but they're not far away to come down. So here we are living in this idyllic world, believing everything is great and the whole world is rosy and, you know, it's all good fun. But meanwhile, you start to look around the world at the conflicts that are going on. You know, there's some very, very serious conflicts going on where there's literally millions dead, you know, with stuff over in the East Europe. You look at the Middle East, what's going on there. Yet here we are in this little island paradise thinking that we're going to be left alone. There's no way Australia will be left alone, you know. And this is the crazy part about it. The Aboriginal people are the only cure for this. If Australia wants to be here indefinitely, it's got to start to sort out the detail of how it got here, because there is no common doctrine as to how Australia got here and what it can do and can't do on the country. This is the Aboriginal people's world, whose sovereignty is unceded, unextinguished, and I don't know if they're going to cede or any of it, by the way, in part or anything, but they might do some power-sharing arrangements, you know, whatever it may be. But some of the nations who can't understand what we're talking about may cede sovereignty altogether, and it'll put powers into play that Australia might not appreciate or like. But it's too bad. You know, Australia is just by sheer ignorance and arrogance thinking that it's right here, we're right, and someone will defend us. And yet you've got someone like Senator Lambie saying, well, we kick the Yanks out, eh? How about we get rid of Pine Gap? Who's going to defend the place if we can't? You know, like you said, we could fit all our military basically into a soccer stadium, if you want to put it that way. We could jam them all in. What have we got? Nothing. You know, in the world of standing militaries, you know, a million people is barely enough these days to defend a territory, especially the size of what we have, you know, the Yidinji or the Australian world. You need more than a million people, and you need literally billions of dollars worth of gear to do so. So, look, we got to be realistic in this world. We need protection from whatever is going on out there. But don't just sit here thinking, oh, it's all going to be right. It's all moonshine and roses.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the country today. We'll be back after the break for some final comments.
Hi, this is Isaiah. You're listening to BBM 987.
I hear a million voices in my head.
Yeah, welcome back. Guys, some final comments before we head off today. We've been talking a lot about compensation. Is that the final figure? Is it the right figure? All those questions. We've also talked about national security, international security, and the ever-changing world of multipolar jurisdictions and things like that. They're pretty heavy concepts, I guess. But ultimately, it comes down to the simplicity of what we keep talking about, the Yidinji way, which is, you know, it's not just the Yidinji way. There's obviously other mob doing it too, talk about sharing and caring and all those wonderful ethical and moral things that we want in our society. And Yerlam, I can just see that, you know, people, this is such an attractive way of doing business that it's too good to believe.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and there's the other side of that coin, which is the temptation of the existing world that is there for everybody else. You know, in this case, on this continent, the Australian system has money in it and all those sorts of things, and that temptation doesn't lead you anywhere. It's about how we move on together forward, which has been described so beautifully during this last few minutes. And that's the way forward. Yidinji's here. We will remain, we're not going anywhere else, and we're going to be here offering that support to anyone else wanting to move forward.
Gennaro, some final comments?
Well, think about your law and the very mention of coexisting sovereignty and how that sort of can coexist on here without any power sharing arrangement, without some sort of formal agreement between those who have the right to be here and those who at this stage don't have the right to be here. You know, the Indigenous Australians, the Pauline Hanson Australians, all them, they don't have the legal right to be here yet. And it's only through their little bit of power play of, you know, of their military and police that they can be here. But just be very wary that there may be a bigger dog out there that's coming to help the Aboriginal people, which would then create massive conflict. We're not wanting to go that way. But I'll tell you what, the government and this gap thing you notice there, the gap is widening. It's pushing people, it's pushing the Aboriginal nations that way, you know, to do deals with those who who will assist them, you know, and they will be genuinely wanting to close the gap and step on the colonial world that's out there. Just be very, very careful. And that's all I can say to people. Look, we've got to sort this out as adults before it gets too far out of hand.
Yeah, that's it. No one's born bad in terms of, we're born into a bad world, I guess. But the thing is that, if we can help these societies that are existing now to reinvigorate that, to adopt the Australians, let's say, into that nation, then that makes sense to me. People often say if you don't love Australia, leave it. Well, the same thing here for the tribal nations. If you don't love Yidinja, if you don't love wherever, then leave it. Because that's the first thing that people say. Oh, this is our law. We don't have this type of law here. Go back into your own country and practice that law. Well, if that's the logic, then fair enough. I agree. But the Yidinja law, with Kulna and the other elders that put this thing together back in the day, they had a bit more a unification or vision in that they wanted it like the old times. And that's what we're here doing. Anyway, Gabriel Galanian, may God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to the show. We'll catch you next week. You have a good day. And may the Prince of Peace be with you wherever you are. And you take care. Culling.
Eddie on the track. Stay awake at night, just until you fall asleep. I won't stay awake too long. Can't wait to see you in my dreams. Man, it's so heavy. Part of your dream, and I'm sleeping as long as you let me. As long as you let me be a part of your dream, and I'm sleeping. Man, you got me falling.